Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. What exactly is corruption in business? You know, for some, corrupt business is overcharging or when businesses take advantage of people. For some, it's exorbitant shareholder profits or irresponsible ecological, political, or social endeavors. All these things are certainly true. But in today's podcast, we're going to look deeper at what's behind corruption in business and learn that it isn't something that affects those people. Join me now as we see beyond corruption and learn that the rails of business upon which corruption often travels are the very same rails that will bring about a new world. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back for another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. This is episode podcast number 163. Can you believe that? Folks, I'm your host. My name is Kevin Weiner. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. So glad to have you with me. Welcome to the broadcast and welcome to Sunday. So folks, we are kind of looking through in a very broad spectrum lens some teachings through the book of Luke, but we're doing it in a very unconventional way. I think you'll understand that as we get closer. Last week we looked at an area of business, and we're going to be continuing this today and maybe next week. There's a number of parables through Luke, basically 12 through 16, 17, 19. There's a number of them in there that talk about managers. They talk about responsibility, investing. They talk about business, and it's all surrounded and related to this idea of the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, which Jesus is saying and proclaiming that is here and it's now. And there's a deeper thing, a bigger thing that is often beyond our ability to see, and so we're getting at that by really looking at it from a very different lens. Today, we're picking it up and we're calling it corruption in business. Corruption in business. If you haven't had a chance to pick up last week's episode, go back and check it out. I think you'll find it helpful, and it's kind of an entry into where we're going with this. So last week, we looked at the flywheel principle, which is causing the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. And that is an idea in the world of social justice that seems intolerable, that rich people just keep getting exponentially richer while the poor get poorer and poorer. This erosion of the middle class as more and more of the middle class become the poor class, and a few of the middle class move into the wealth-gaining class. And I suggested last week that this income inequality wasn't social injustice, that it was actually the design of the universe. And that was a shocking, kind of hard-hitting message. And I recognize from a lot of folks, and I know I've been doing this long enough to know about the feedback when I get it. When it's quiet or it's either very hot and noisy, something has happened. And this is just certainly no difference in this case last week. So what happened is many of you probably just didn't have a framework for how that could be possible. How can it be possible that the design of the universe, the design of the kingdom, is to have this huge income inequality? It seems like if God loved us and the kingdom of God were actually here and we're working and God were actually doing any of the things he says he was going to do, that some of this huge gap between the haves and the have-nots would certainly erode, right? This is the idea, right? This is behind so much of the teaching in social justice, and I can understand it. It does seem unfair, doesn't it? And so when we read a parable like the one we did last week in Luke with the parable of the talents, and we see the people depicted in there claiming that this is unfair, that the guy has 10 talents, why are you giving it to him? This really rubs us the wrong way. And the reason it does is because we just don't have a framework for how that's possible. And what I'm hoping to do in today, and what I tried to start last week, is to give you a framework. I mean, comments like, hey, Kevin, something must be wrong with your assertion. right? You can't be interpreting the Bible correctly here. You cannot be, you can't have it right, because everything we know about social justice, everything we know about the love of God seems to be on the balance here. And so I want to just basically state that the principle that I discussed about the flywheel principle, which Jesus teaches, he clearly says, to those who have, more will be given. To those who have not, even what they have will be taken away. And this is a principle. This is almost like a rule, a law of how God has built the world, how this kingdom is established. And the principle is valid because of what I believe is underneath of it, and that is a generative economy. Now, if you don't know what the word generative means, it means it's an economy based on abundance. It's not an economy based on scarcity. Now, in our world, so much of what we see is scarcity, right? The kingdom of God is not based on scarcity. It's based on abundance. An example would be, you know, there's one apple that has several seeds in it. And each seed has the potential to become a tree that generates hundreds, if not thousands, of apples, which generate hundreds of thousands of seeds and potentially hundreds of thousands of trees and then millions of apples and millions of seeds, and to the point where it's exponential, right? So one thing turns into many, many, many things. That's the design that God has put into the world. See, now that is a generative-based economy. Now, investment, which was what we saw last week, go out and invest in business, engage in business was our topic. And investment is the work of basically replanting the seeds instead of discarding them. So when you eat an apple, you would take the seeds that are in that apple and reinvest them, replant them. That's what investing does. It allows you to take what is yours, whether it's a small amount if you're poor, or a middle amount if you're in the middle class, or a large amount if you're in the upper class, and reinvest it, right? Abundant futures require investments, right? These big changes, innovations, things that are going to change the world, redeem the problems, and set us into a new place cost money. And it's not just the rich person's burden to do that. All people are required to invest what they have to grow it for the sake of an abundant future, right? All seeds contribute to it. And so debt, when we have debt and we carry lots of debt, that erodes the future. That's just the facts, right? If you have to pay back a lot of debt, then the future is diminished. And managing and investing is whatever that we have, whatever little, a lot, whatever it is. Managing and investing is the work of the kingdom. Managing and investing is your personal and my personal responsibility. It's the essence of the parable of the talents and the minas, which we talked about last week. The principle is sound, folks. Everyone who applies the principle of managing and investing, no matter how much you have, will gradually increase what you have. That is a law. It is a principle. If you manage and invest what you have wisely, you will grow what you have. Yeah, there's no exception that I can think of. There may be one, but I haven't seen it. If you can think of one, please write me, let me know, okay? The problem isn't our government. The problem isn't, you know, democracy. It isn't, you know, our economy. The problem is corruption. You see, and as Richard Rohr would say, there's enough for everybody's need in our world. There's an abundance for everybody's need, but there isn't enough for everyone's greed. And there's a reason for that. You see, we always want just a little bit more than what we have. We always do. And that's not always a bad thing, right? That level of discontent, I spoke about this a few weeks ago, about do not ignore your discontent. That's where the new world is birthed. It comes from. It's your responsibility to go and take your discontent and convert it into some kind of satisfaction, right? The reason you know there is something good is because there's a part in you that is created for that, right? But that's that greed that's within all of us is the problem. See, everything we hate about our corrupt governments about our corrupt businesses or corrupt economies, if you see them that way. All of those things you hate about that lives within your heart and my heart too. You see, corruption is a truth problem. And a lot of times we just think corruption is just something, it's just people making corrupt decisions. That's true, but we make corrupt decisions because we don't possess the truth or because we won't apply the truth we possess. Do you understand that? That's why it's a truth problem. I can't think of any problem in the world that isn't a truth problem. I write about this in my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Every single problem you have or have ever faced or ever will face is a truth problem. Cancer is a truth problem because we do not know enough about it to solve it. Other kinds of problems are truth problems because we know the solution, but we won't do it, right? These are why we have weight problems. These are why we have debt problems. This is why we have addiction problems. We know the truth. The truth is we cannot overspend, and yet we still do. Right? The truth is we shouldn't eat that thing or so much of that thing. We shouldn't have 17 soda pops in a day, but we do. Right? This is why everything's a truth problem. It's either something you don't know or won't do. And a struggling student, for example, might cheat if he or she perceives it's going to give them some sort of an advantage. You know, our individual success requires that our employers are able to make advantageous exchanges in the marketplace. Have you ever thought about that? It's not like you getting a promotion, making your money and paying off your house or getting to do whatever it is somehow disconnected from the business in which you serve. You know, now some people who are in sales obviously get this because you're directly tied to the economic engine of your company. But some people are not. You depend on a sales team that's very removed from you to find new business so that your employer is still there when you come in on Monday morning. You see, we're all interconnected. And your individual success is predicated upon the success of that company. And all the companies that are in your same space are also predicated upon their success in that company. And so the corruption is not seeking to find an advantage. The corruption is prioritizing that advantage as a distinct thing from all other people, all other things, right? When you make the advantage you get the most important thing, then it's really just a form of otherness disease. And I've talked about otherness disease quite a bit on this podcast. You see, shareholder value is really important. Right? That's what the whole parable was all about. But shareholder value becomes corruption when it's seen as distinct from all others in the society. So when a shareholder profit becomes more important than the product creating an ecological disaster in the world, that's a problem. That's corruption, right? That's how you know it. Corruption is the loss of an integrated worldview. It's the loss of seeing everything as connected. It's this individual perspective. You see, governments, institutions, companies, they all have power that emerges when people who are already disintegrated use the institution for personal advantage. And trust me, almost every single person goes to work thinking, what is my company going to give to me, right? And yes, you're going to do a job for the company, and you know that. You're going to give that to the company. But most people see it as though they're distinct from their company, that their job is simply what they do, and their company has to give something to them. They're already disintegrated. And so what happens is a disintegrated person engages with an institution, and that institution then takes that disintegration and uses it for its own self-preservation. You know, advantage that the company gets, it obscures the truth, right? We close a blind eye to systems that give us our well-being, right? I mean, if you work for a company that is dumping toxic waste into the river, but you are extremely well protected and you have a great living and you make a lot of money, you might find ways to spin the truth so that you can feel okay about going to work and dumping toxic waste. But, you know, you might say, well, I don't actually make that decision. I'm just a cog in the wheel, right? The advantage you're taking from the institution is obscuring the truth. And we all do this. Like, we defend our institutions. We like to think that our widget is so much better and different than the next person's widget. And yes, there's always differentiations and things like that, but we will defend our institution. We protect our institution. And sometimes we get so into our institutions, our companies, that we take our identity from that institution. I've worked with this company for 25 years. I am this inside and out. We do a better job than everybody else. We're this. We're so proud, right? And institutions simply make a trade with us, and we're happy to make it. You see, in exchange for our livelihood and our identity, we will put the institution's interests above other people. And so much of sales in the world and promotion and growing the business is really about how do we get the business, not so much about how do we serve the people we're trying to serve. See, if you get that wrong, you become what I call inside out. And if you get it right, then your company becomes outside in. It's more about serving the others, and the profits will come. And there are businesses that work outside in, and there are businesses that work clearly inside out, and you'll know it. But corruption is the thing that makes that difference. Corruption is the otherness disease, like I said, and it infects us with what I call competition. Now, some of you you defend competition. You thrive in competition. You think competition is good because it helps drive business. It helps you be creative, work harder, you know, all those things that competition is seen as a positive. But the test of whether we've become what we hate is the amount of competition that's in our heart. So if you're loaded down with a ton of competition, folks, then the corruption that you think is out there is actually inside. So carefully think about that one. If you hate big corporations and their impact on government, but at the same time you hate it when a competing business gets work that you could have obtained, then that same corruption lives in you. See, the only difference is the scope of influence, right? A big corporation that impacts the government has a huge scope of influence on others, whereas your small business or your local business may not. And you might be saying to me, hey, I run a really honest, fair business here. I'm not corrupt in my practices. That's not fair. I do something different than the corrupt businesses out there. And that may be true. And your business may be a better alternative in the long run. But if you want more power and influence in order to diminish another's power and influence, then you don't really understand corruption yet. See, there's nothing wrong with having power or having influence, but there is everything wrong with desiring power and influence. If you cannot see that difference, you're still snoozing, you're snoring, you're asleep. You need to wake up. Your consciousness needs to be alerted. So look at the story in Luke 19, verse 2, of the story of Zacchaeus, right? He was the chief tax collector, the chief tax collector. And nobody hated tax collectors more in that day than the people, right? These tax collectors were seen as the most corrupt. I mean, this is like the worst guy, the most evil offender at Monsanto, like in today's world, right? Like, you wouldn't want to work for them, right? This tax collector, this Zacchaeus, had more power and influence than just about anybody. And somehow Jesus had such an effect on his soul that he was finally free inside enough to let go of power and influence and identity. And as a result, he paid back everything that he defrauded. And if anything came to his attention, he would pay it back fourfold. Like, he was ready to make it all right and to stop going with the program, right? He was free from the power and the influence and the identity. He was not here to compete anymore. He wasn't looking out for the best interest. Now pay attention here, because he remained a tax collector. It's not like he left the company and said, they're all bad and this is terrible and I'm not doing it. No, no. What he did is he said, I'm no longer going to take the advantage that I get and be blind to the truth because of my advantage. I'm going to be responsible in my role. And in that institution, he just wasn't going to use his own advantage and power anymore as he had. And he shared the power that he had with others. And what Jesus said of him was that that is the very definition of salvation. And so if you've got a definition of salvation in your that says, well, it's accepting Jesus into your heart. It's saying this little sinner's prayer somehow makes you into a saved person. And you define that as a Christian. Folks, Jesus is saying something very different here. Salvation is really a heart that has let go of competition, that has let go of institutional power, and has stopped seeing everybody else as other than them. Salvation is when you see yourself as those, as others. And though you aren't them, you're not other than them either. Salvation is when self-promotion gives way to the promotion of others. It doesn't mean you ignore yourself. It just means that you are now focused on the promotion of others. And as a result, you will be benefited. But you're not focusing on that benefit. You're not focusing on the advantage you're going to get. You're focusing on the gift that you're going to give. Now, there are businesses that are getting this, and I'll talk about them in a minute. You see, it's not the loss of the organization. Salvation doesn't mean we get rid of our democracy. We get rid of, you know, all the corruption because it's all baked into the system, folks. That's not it. Zacchaeus was still a tax collector. Salvation is integration, not disintegration. Salvation is integration. He became integrated with all others. Zacchaeus no longer saw others. Every example of corruption that you've ever seen surrounds self-interest. Think about it. What's the worst offender you can think of? It's always comes down to self-interest. And of course, the most transforming, redeeming work in the world is always based on the interests of others. It doesn't mean that it's to the exclusion of the establishment that is focused on the interests of others. See, that's how you can now know corruption. Corruption in business is the same as corruption everywhere. Corruption is the most widespread truth problem in the world. It's a stranglehold that is loosed from the inside out, not from the inside in, outside in, right? So corruption is an inside job. Corruption is changed on the inside. The problem is not capitalism. It's not big corporations. The problem is corruption. The world, though, is, like I said, is gradually waking up to this reality that scarcity and fear and competition are the wrong ways to grow a civilization. Those are all based on scarcity, that there's only so much to go around and everybody has to fight to get their little piece of the pie. That's not true. We live in an abundant economy, an abundant world. And everybody has enough. There's enough for everybody. You have to simply go out, find your creative impulse, begin serving the world, begin managing and investing what you have, and everything will start to change. Become committed to excellence in your craft, whatever it is. Work it. Learn from everybody. Don't compete. Serve. It's very simple, and yet it's counterintuitive. See, there's a wave of conscious capitalism that is out there, and it's redeeming the world by using this others first model of servant leaderships. And it's good for business. It's great for shareholders. It's great for everybody who works there. The CEOs, the hired hands, and all the workers are blessed and benefit from this kind of business because it's going out, it's helping others, it's not plundering, it's serving. It's exciting, folks. It's absolutely exciting, and we get to be a part of it if we want to. In fact, we can each join this revolution at any moment, no matter where you're employed. So if you are working for the worst guy at Monsanto, guess what? You can employ this conscious capitalism even there. You will have to make decisions based on serving others. Use the power you have to include all others. Right? Yeah, it may not go very far if you're not a person in a position with great power, but it's where you start. It's where you start. And because the switch from corruption to promotion of others is flicked on the inside, a completely new world is actually possible within a single generation. So folks, the problems that we've found in our world are so fixable. They're so obtainable. It's so like within not even a whole entire generation, it can completely be eradicated. And I know, I get it. It sounds like a pipe dream. And I get why. It's because there's a lot of hard hearts out there that will not part with their power. Right? It's because they think their power is theirs, and they get their power by excluding others and labeling others, and otherness, disease, and competition gives them their social, racial, economic power. But you see, the only heart we really have to concern ourselves with is our own. You know, is that you? Do you take your identity from your company? Do you take your power from your workplace? Do you kind of re-spin the truth so that it makes you and your company look better than it actually is? See, if so, corruption lives in your heart too. And whatever happened to Zacchaeus's heart needs to happen to ours, right? It has to happen to ours. Salvation has to come to our house too. Our consciousness must rise. And the moment it does, we actually move from scarcity and fear and competition. We move into abundance and liberty and service. See, we move from two people divided into one people united. It's amazing. It's the model and the plan of the whole world. It's the design of the new world is unity and diversity. We don't compete with those who are different. We don't have others. We have people who are like us, with us, and together we become one. We become more because of each other. That's the model. That's where it's all headed. See, we don't have to wait for the promised new world to arrive, because for some of us, it already has. And what's amazing is that the kingdom does not come despite the businesses. It's going to come because of business.